The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
We're back. We're both here. We're both live. And you're joining We the People Radio with Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, Bob Martin, and our guest today, Dr. Richard Malotki. He's going to be chiming in about our favorite topic of late, Obamacare. And we're going to have our congressional representative, Mr. Doug LaMalfa.
What is the buzzsaw we have going in the background?
Oh, sorry, that's me. I'm sorry. It's always me, Bob. You know that.
Like, is there something we should know?
If there's anything weird going on, it's probably me. Am I right? That was the fan for my laptop.
Good God.
It's really loud sometimes.
I was on a plane that was quieter last week. That's not good.
Anyway,
Use it in a library.
Yeah, no.
Hey, and just want everybody to know that next week is Thanksgiving, and we have pre-recorded our show, so it will be airing on Sunday, but... don't call in.
We can chat room.
We can chat room. Always we can chat room.
We can always chat room.
And on that note, go to wethepeopleradio.us. You will find out everything about today's topic and our guest, as well as 3 years of archived shows, all individual links that you can email out far and wide. We've covered everything possible and imaginable under the umbrella of fiscal responsibility and limited government.
Please say that's not true. I still have to figure out some more shows.
And adherence to the Constitution.
Not everything, no.
Oh, I know. There's so much out there. So much to go.
Unfortunately.
And, if you've got some questions for Dr. Richard Malotki this morning when we start talking about Obamacare, we would love to hear your stories. So the number is 530-605-4567.
We have to keep calling him by his whole name because... Dr. Ann Malotki is our dentist, my dentist.
Yes.
I get to go see her next week. We're in the process of crown.
Always a problem.
I'm mid-crown. I woke up this morning and I was like, oh, yeah. I was kind of hurting this morning. I have to go back in. So anyway.
That's a bummer.
But before we get to Obamacare, well, sort of in the throes of Obamacare, I guess, we have Congressman Doug LaMalfa on the phone to give us... We'll call it a congressional update since we don't know what he's going to do. I had the ringer off on my phone, and so every time he called me, I couldn't answer, and so we don't know what we're going to talk about.
You know,
about.
And I would like to point out that...
Yes, that Doug, I should have a ringer on my phone for everyone. Yes.
And Doug has a Facebook page, which is really great because he keeps people very well updated on that Facebook page, so I encourage people to go there and...
He's a Facebooker.
And like it so that you can kind of stay in tune with what's going on. And he kind of gives a really nice... Northern California, rural America touch on his reports. So
yeah,
I like it.
Because that's where he lives.
And happy anniversary to Doug and Jill.
And Bill and I. We were married 17 years. We figured it out.
Really?
Because I had a reminder on my phone that's still on.
You have to have a reminder?
Yeah, because neither of us... I know, it's sad.
Does Bill know that?
No, Bill has to have a reminder, too, because we never know. It's the 23rd. Yeah, it was yesterday. We actually remembered it during the same
happy
day.
Happy anniversary.
I know, we still get that.
That's fantastic.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, imagine that.
17 years.
I know, scary. Okay, so did you push the button?
Doug is on
there. Is Doug trapped in there?
He's just listening to us chatter on about nothing.
He's ready to... hang himself.
I'm just listening here. I'm like the NSA, just taking a dip.
Like the NSA. You know, we appreciate that. Since
you know, just like when you have to call in to anybody and say, just call me, be monitored for better quality of service. Yeah, right.
It's implied now. They no longer have to say that. It saves them so much time.
Sure it does.
Yeah, just figure it.
We all know.
God.
Well, so, happy anniversary to you kids there. I'm a little disturbed, too, that you had to have your... phones doesn't seem to have a working ringer remind you of the day, but you know.
I know. Well, I took out the little brains of the memory card, and so apparently, if you assign ringers to people and it's on the little chip, when you take that out of your telephone and you put it back in, it doesn't reconnect everyone. You go forever.
Doesn't ring it?
No, you go to silence, directly to silence.
Can you show me how to put that on my chip?
Actually, it is one of the choices. You can actually click the settings and it'll say ignore all calls from this person. It's like so anyway. That
just,
wasn't the
just
setting.
Just program your ringtone as silence.
Yeah, it's pretty great actually. I'm gonna work on that next.
Okay. So, so what about the madness?
Good to be on with you all here. Doctor, it's great to have your perspective on here, too, because when, you know, the topic becomes I don't know what to call it. I don't like calling it the Affordable Care Act. I don't like calling it Obamacare. It's called the government health care takeover, pretty much.
Yeah, that's a good description.
Where the rubber meets the road is that doctor-patient relationship. That's what everybody cares about. Yeah, we don't really care about the insurance or what the name of the program is. When people need health care, health services, or whatever, it's they and their doctor and the rest of the apparatus that delivers that. So, but if you don't mind for a moment, I think it'd be really important to touch on this Iran situation here and the deal that was struck here just a few hours ago, evidently, that has some pretty big effects on the short term, as you're probably hearing, it's reported as a 6-month deal to ease up the sanctions a little bit on Iran from the international community that's been treating them pretty tough. But on the other hand, the overall goal is that Iran does not complete and deploy nuclear weapons, and I think the prime partner in this whole world community that is worried about this is Israel, because we know that they're a target for a lot of Middle East, I'll just call them haters, that they really don't want them to exist. We know that's a very harsh reality there. Iran hasn't showed in the past that it's going to be any better about that, and indeed, if they're the one of the first ones to have the bomb there, how can you tell what they would do? And so Israel has the most key interest in seeing that things go right and go well. And so you're seeing this morning that the criticism of the deal that was struck is still very stern by Israel and their PM Netanyahu. So what did we get? Well, there's some partial easing of the sanctions on Iran. Part of them are still in place, but it allows them immediately to get in. What they're looking for is airplane parts and having some of their oil released, that some of their assets have been tied up. And so you got to give people some credit that at least they're trying to do something besides the ultimate, which is either airstrikes against Iran. By Israel or by more on the same side as Israel, which does that then precipitate World War III? Because even though there's a lot of neighbors of Iran that don't like them or are not very comfortable with them, we seem to have an agreement with the Saudis. Does Israel doing something then completely take the whole Islamic world in the Middle East and other areas around the world and just hit the on button for a big wave of international terrorism? Does this draw the type of military escalation that turns into World War III starting in the Middle East? Biblically, if you believe your revelations, then that could be it. But, it's hard for us, obviously, to tell. We aren't supposed to know that information. That's the when and the where exactly in the Bible. But I'm concerned that if we don't project the right strength, if the U.S. is not projecting the right strength on some of our European allies, etc., then it puts Israel in a box where when they see their existence is hinging upon only themselves and their action, because the rest of the countries that are supposed to be their allies are not holding firm, not doing what needs to be done, and allowing Iran to go on, then they're in a very compromised position, and they have to do what they have to do. And Israel doing it by themselves could precipitate a lot of that. So that's a long monologue there. But what do you think? Who are you folks been watching?
Yeah, well, it always looks like they're playing a game of chicken, just a bad game of chicken. Mm-hmm. And giving Iran anything,
I think you'd like to see, you'd like to think if you give them a little rope, they'd blow themselves up, but that never works that way.
Right. I love you.
You know, there's also, you kind of come from the opposite question, and Iran has been maintaining this for many years, is that they have a right to do certain things. And so, you know, this is a show and a group that does maintain that individuals have rights. You know, Iran was telling us what to do with our nukes or anything else that we do, or are we going to take that seriously? And so do we have the right to tell the sovereign nation what they can do to have centrifuges or, you know, move towards nuclear power or even weapons? I mean, does one sovereign nation have that right to tell the other what to do? And that's a philosophical question that they've been pushing. Well, their problem is that they act a heck of a lot like a terrorist country, right? And the international community, most of them doesn't like that, but we don't always have partners when you talk about maybe Russia and China and Korea and others that, I use the word partner loosely, but, you know, half the time they're helping them do these things, they're helping to keep the turmoil and chaos going. So, you know, do we really have the right to tell a sovereign nation what to do? Instead, we respond with trade or the sanctions that we as an international association of countries that like freedom can do by having trade sanctions, say, now we're not dealing with you, or even moving towards a partial blockade because we think that Iran is behaving poorly. So it's really complex, and so you have to commit at least there's an effort to have a negotiation on that, but when the final fruit is that what came out of this is Iran does not have to dismantle any of its centrifuges. They have about 19,000 of them. They don't have to stop the building of a larger plant that actually can produce the nuclear type material as a byproduct in a place called Arak, A-R-A-K, to keep moving in that direction. This is just kind of a temporary slowdown or pause. And so there's a lot of people around the world, including the Prime Minister Netanyahu, who believes that nothing's been done by this agreement other than to give Iran kind of a tacit seal of approval to keep on going, because they're not required as part of this six-month agreement, which eases sanctions and gets more economic flow going to them. They're not required to dismantle anything or really stop anything. They may be required in the final agreement to turn over some of the nuclear material they've produced, but it's not quite weapons grade yet anyways, I understand. They need to keep, you know, in the centrifuges, they keep refining until it comes up to a percentage of pure material that you can make a bomb out of. So I'll stop there. It's again, is it kind of a push? I think the folks that are really see themselves in the gun sights believe that they've actually legitimized Iran in this and feel like they've set back the process instead of holding firmer. Because Iran wants out of the sanctions badly. They want goods to flow, economic activity to flow for them. And when you make an agreement like this, it legitimizes them in that world place instead of saying, no, you're still a terrorist country. So that's what a lot of people are disappointed about. There's no perfect solution. So I'll stop there.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, at some point you have to make a judgment. You know, we have to make a judgment as a country. So do we call them, you know, the dangerous crazy people, or do we, everybody's good, you know, everything is the same? What do you guys think?
Well, I think they're going to get a bomb no matter what we do.
Yeah.
I think they're going to get a bomb no matter what we do, and the question is how long it's going to take them, and then what will they do with it?
And let's face it, nobody really plays by the rules.
Yeah,
they never do.
You know, Pakistan.
Well, the good guys in the West are the ones that always play by the rules.
Right. Yeah, we always think that we have so much control.
Well, or if somebody would have stopped Germany after they annexed Czechoslovakia and the Sudetenland, then maybe World War II wouldn't happen too. So, you know, there's that criticism, I think, that you can make where you see a belligerent nation that's looking like they're going to cause a whole bunch of trouble. What's the international community going to, where do they draw the line, I guess?
You know, it's kind of funny, Doctor, that you bring that up, because there's people out there, you know, looking on the... I'm on the tweetosphere here, what have you, that people are likening this to Neville Chamberlain coming back from Geneva with this agreement with
peace in our time.
Iran. Peace in our time. So, you know, I mean, this is a six-month thing, but does this also 6 months cause them to quietly weigh underneath the ground somewhere, keep fiercely doing that? Because there's a lot of people that they feel that they're within just a few months of having what they need to develop the bomb anyway, and this is allowing it to happen under our noses, even though you have, you know, inspectors are going to go into that plant I mentioned in Iraq, and inspectors doing other things, like, well, it's a big country, and anyway.
It's also, it's kind of hard for me to imagine that they would ever use that bomb against Israel, even though they say they want to, because Israel would turn them into one big window pane. You know, Israel's got the bomb. You know, Israel would not let them flatten Tel Aviv without doing something back. So
it's a little bit like burning down your neighbor's house. It's like,
yeah,
it's kind of close.
On the other hand, if one of those bombs found its way on a barge and got lit off in the East River, you know, in a 10 megaton warhead, that would make quite a mess over here. You know, New York City wouldn't be this. They wouldn't be the same for 40,000 years. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, what are you going to do about that?
And it just makes us look like we're just the crummiest allies ever.
Yeah, it's no kidding.
Our whole ally thing is
it's been decimated.
You know, we're like my mom's dog. You know, big giant, you know, 100-pound dog, and the UPS guy rings the doorbell and it pees and rolls over.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, that's a beautiful analogy. I like that.
It's not really all that beautiful, but but it's funny.
Well, and Doug, I like your biblical reference to Revelations, because in all things political and everything going on around us, history repeats itself. If people don't pay attention, they don't learn. So,
well, I've visited Israel before, and you know we've driven past a place called Megiddo. It exists, and they, you know, it's prophesied that that's kind of where things all come together when the ultimate happens in Revelations with the ultimate Armageddon conflict. So, you know, I think this is a perfectly appropriate conversation for Sunday morning, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. We're always cheery here at We the People Radio.
And we're incredibly appropriate. Thank God that wasn't our goal.
So, you want to talk Obamacare, Doug?
Or, yeah, stuff domestic?
Certainly.
That's everybody's favorite topic.
I still don't know what to call it, though, but Dennis Miller had a neat little quip that he had put out on his Twitter page. He said, in reference to the names of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, or all this stuff, is that he's not going to start calling it the Affordable Health Care Act until Barack Obama legally changes his name to Barack Affordable.
I saw that.
You can always count on Dennis Miller.
I love Dennis Miller.
You know, he's pretty good wit. So.
He is. He's the best. Hey, we better take a quick break. We actually forgot we were on the radio. We're all just sitting here chatting away. Bob's like, yoo-hoo, got to pay for the show. So we need to thank our advertisers. We'll be back in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online in the chat, wethepeopleradio.us. Here at KCNR, 1460 AM. It's a special song for Iran.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Well, the games people play, every night and every day now. Never meaning what they say now, never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine. Whoa.
And we're back. Great job, Bob, musical savant and all-around show producer. We're talking with Dr. Richard Merlotky. Is Doug still on the line?
I don't know. I think so.
Are you there, Doug?
Did we lose him?
Still burning.
Okay. Yeah. Still burning some daylight.
So now we're going to like jump into Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act or the Unaffordable Care Act or however you choose.
Or that really, really big mess that all starts with a letter in your mailbox that says
The Barack Affordable Act. I think I'll go with
that. So
yeah, what are we going
to
do?
How are things on the Hill when it comes to that, Doug?
Well, you know, they've been a little strained. If you've been watching the last 6 weeks here, there's been a what's blamed is a shutdown over it, and you know, it's tied into a lot of other things besides that. But, you know, for those of us that can see ahead of time that there was going to be problems with the implementation and problems with the full taking effect of this plan, that we were trying to head it off. You know, for a lot of reasons, we don't want to, you know, see the pain inflicted on all the customers, all the physicians, everybody that's providing care and using it, with a plan that's going to basically freeze everything in its implementation, and then the chaos that is caused, not just, you know, from the websites and the signing up, but, you know, what are people supposed to do? Having a heck of a time trying to get signed up. Signed up just sounds like feels a little bit like sheep being fed to slaughter. Sent to slaughter, by the way. Like, oh, let's go get signed up. Like, oh man, I don't really want to be signed up. I don't want to get on the computer and put all my personal information in there.
Especially when keep hearing about how secure it is. Because that's awesome.
And I don't think a lot of people understand that basically what the state exchanges are nothing more than an expansion of their current Medicaid programs. So when you go into the Obamacare exchange, you're going on to Medicaid.
Much of that is the case, because the first people to sign up aren't the ones that are the insurance policy buyers. It's been very heavily tilted towards that kind of customer, if you want to call it that.
So, sure.
You know, my time's a little more limited today, and I'd like to kind of throw the question to Dr. Malotki as what he thinks about what we're doing back there. Are we effectively trying to battle in a direction, you know, beating this thing back? I'd like to hear, you know, on the ground here and on the air, what he thinks our direction should be. And
One of the things you mentioned earlier, Doug, was about the doctor-patient relationship, and I think you are right. Fundamentally, most of what I do is dependent on cultivating that relationship, at least because I'm family practice, so I'm kind of on the front lines of delivering primary care. And it's a really great job. I love doing it. And the way I do it is working for me, and it's working for my patients. But it's not something that the government wants. The government doesn't, I don't think, want primary care delivered the way I was taught to deliver it. And I'm just doing what I was taught 35 years ago.
So what do you think that does for the next generation that would be?
Healthcare
providers.
Yeah, it's going to be different. I think the people in the future, the people that do my job, will be nurses, because you can make them a lot faster. And I think everybody has the view or opinion that my job is really easy. Mm-hmm. It must be, because that's how I'm paid. We're the lowest paid doctors, and even before all this stuff. But it's going to get worse. And you know, the kids coming out of school, they can't pay their loans back on what I make now. So,
and how many years of schooling and their residencies that require? You know, I have a 4-year college degree, right? And
yeah. Most people have no idea what we are, actually. Yeah. So, you know, it's 4 years of college, but it's kind of more than that, because most of the people that were in my med school class, they all gave the speech at their high school graduation. They all got straight A's on the hardest courses in the college. And then you have to do 4 years of med school, and then you have to do the residency. And if you can survive that, you're a pretty well-trained person most of the time. And
I think sometimes the general public tends to focus more on, and these would be the healthy people, of course, tend to focus more on the type of home that a doctor lives in or the car that they drive rather than the care that they can deliver. And I've always said, if you're on your deathbed and you're counting on a great physician to save your life, I don't think you're going to care how much money they make at that point.
No.
Well, I think, I live in a nice house because I married a dentist. I'm not an idiot.
And you have a good office because you married a dentist.
No, and I chose family practice, even though I knew it was the lowest paid thing. I love my job. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be a surgeon. I could have been a surgeon. I was one of the top of my class guys, for whatever that's worth. Nothing. But I really like my job.
sorry.
Well, I just, and I have a lot of non-financial rewards in my job. But the thing is, fundamentally, I think with your question, Doug, is that people in the government do not understand how we do our job. They do not understand it. And they've got a bunch of Harvard MBAs sitting around at the insurance company with sharp pencils saying, hey, we can make this math work a lot better if we can get those lazy doctors to see 40 people a day instead of 18.
Well, and let's talk about that for a minute, yeah. Because I know that one of the things that people are starting to experience now are going in to visit their physicians and having 5 minutes of their time.
We call it the bum's rush.
Yeah, a conveyor belt medicine. And where with you, and I have a family member that sees you as a patient, and they told me that they have 30 minutes to sit and chat with you about whatever they want.
We chatted about my blood test for like an hour last week because there was a lot of time laughing about my allergy test.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but that's not going to be the case under Obamacare. You're going to be in, you're going to be out, you're not going to be speaking with the physician more than likely.
See, the good part is, though, he'll bill your insurance, but you're not a provider for anybody, right? Isn't that how it works?
I don't even know, to tell you the truth. I mean, my girls know that. I mean, I'm not a provider for Medicare or the big ones like Blue Cross, Blue Shield, stuff like that, because their reimbursement scheme, for instance, Medicare, for my job, you have to see 40 people a day to pay your health.
Sure.
You know, I've got my overhead's $160 an hour. Well, it was $160 an hour before I moved into our new office. I don't even want to calculate it now.
Yeah.
Well, let me jump in there real quick, too. So here's the blueprint we already have.
Which is awful.
Your reimbursements under Medi-Cal, Medicare, or even, you know, battling with insurance companies, it's hard for you to get paid what it takes to run your office as well as make a decent living. And I'm not one of the ones that believes doctors are out to, nor should it matter to me what your income is or,
sure.
you know, how well you
exactly.
are. It isn't my business. It's not my business what you make. It's my business is, do I, am I happy with the service that's being provided, do I think it's fair? Okay, that's the end of the day.
And I think that's what we should allow to happen. I mean, I'm very comfortable doing my best job and giving the patients a bill, and if they think it's worth it, they'll pay the bill and come back. And if they don't think it's worth it, they'll go somewhere else. And I think that's great. I love that.
That's called the free market.
Well, your treatment by the government, when you're basically, excuse me, doing government work, when you're taking Medi-Cal patients, Medicare patients, like that. And so, look how you're getting abused and getting reimbursed. You have to wait a long time. You have to prove all these things. They're just trying to find ways to not pay you. I mean, I can see that all this pain.
It's
out paying cash.
Well, it's. I guess I could probably tell a story because it's true about my first, I think, 6 weeks. I was in med school about 6 weeks, and most of us are, you know, 22-year-old, red-hot, smartest kids we ever met type thing, and we thought we were going to take the world by storm. And they brought this guy, he was probably 70-year-old family doctor, they brought him in and he gave a little lecture to us, talked to us for an hour. I'll never forget him. And he looked at us and he said, all right, you hotshots, you know, you're going to make 90% of your diagnoses by talking to people. You're going to make 5% of them with your x-rays and blood tests, and 5% of them you won't get, you got to refer out. And we all thought he was full of it, but within about 6 months, we all realized he was right.
Yeah, but who knows better than the patient?
Well, what we're talking about is getting the right differential diagnosis. So even if the patients can't read and write, they can always tell you what they've got if you ask them enough questions. And if I don't have enough time to ask enough questions or enough time to hear about the grandson's home run in the Little League game, that person is not going to tell me, oh, yeah, I was coughing up blood last week, but I don't want my wife to know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have two suicidal patients in my office, average two a week probably. You know, my job is not a very easy job always. I'm not swabbing throats all day, but I think that's what the government thinks I do.
Yeah, and unlike
so, if you're having a doc in the box situation here, where I go into whatever my medical facility is going to be under the Obamacare Act, I might be unfortunate to see you this week. You know, maybe next month it's going to be a different doctor and a different doctor. And I think you just really underline.
Well, it's not going to be a doctor; it's going to be a nurse.
Well, yeah, whoever that person is, it won't even be the same person twice in a row. So you said a very important thing. You're building a trust. You're building a, you know, I don't want you to tell my wife about this because I don't want her to know I'm coughing up blood. Well, eventually you're going to get around to that, but you have to draw people out.
Right.
To get them to tell you things, because it is a, you know, you do have a hard job. And is that going to get improved in any fashion by moving more in the direction of what the government already does under Medicaid, Medicare, Medi-Cal? Or, I mean, we can start a whole diatribe on the VA, which I promise not to do here, but here you have the VA as just a narrow section of a base of customers just trying to help veterans get their health care, and we know the nightmare is that. So this federal government thinks it's going to take it over for the rest of the 90-something percent of the population and do this to you and do this to us as customers. I mean, that's why we battle this back there in D.C.
And, you know, something else that's come up, and, you know, we all hear personal stories a lot lately from people experiencing the ramifications of Obamacare, and let's look at your specialists. For instance, a urologist. A lot of them are opting not to get involved in the exchanges, which more people are ending up in. Blue Cross, Blue Shield being a main provider for one of the for California covered. So when you've got a problem that requires a specialist, you know, I know that you can't find urologists in Reading anymore.
Well, partly that's just because of a couple of guys retired, too, and they were real busy. But yeah, many of the specialists are fairly unhappy with what's been going on, the way things are now. The system now is really broken, primarily, I think, like Doug said, because I think the government's in charge of 60% of it now, of the healthcare dollars. So, I mean, why do you think it's screwed up?
So let's talk about...
If I can jump in there again on, you know, the Affordable Care, I still don't know what to call it, but it's supposed to be fixing a lot of things that may or may not be broken in the American health system. But what it doesn't address and what's rarely getting talked about, maybe more so, I'll just say on the Republican side, but is that we're not talking about how do we fix the high cost of doing business or the unnecessary costs of doing business. I mean, the type of unnecessary and what my view, you have to carry a lot more insurance than maybe would be necessary in the ideal world and do things that are, you're avoiding lawsuits, you're avoiding the type of things that would get you in trouble, perhaps in a legal sense, because you're having to defend yourself. And, you know, I believe, you know, let a doctor have his head on the thing.
I don't worry about that really, Doug. So, you know, if you... See, the thing is, if you have a good doctor-patient relationship, the patients aren't going to get mad at you. And most of the time when you get sued, it's because someone gets mad at you. And I've never been sued. Have I ever done anything not perfect? Yeah, I'm a human. I've missed stuff before. It's taken me longer than I wanted to figure something out. But, you know, people know I'm doing my best. And if they know you're doing your best... That's not really an issue. I think the big issue is...
Well, these days with drive-by lawsuits over ADA and everything else, though, you don't know what you're going to get, so you have to be covered. So,
right.
You know, the thrust of the question is, what do we do to reduce costs so that you have a better way to run your office?
Well, I think one of the best ways is to make patients have a little skin in the game, which they don't have under this new CARE Act. But, you know, most of our wounds in our culture are self-inflicted. So, you know, if a person is eating themselves into oblivion or smoking themselves into oblivion or not taking their blood pressure medicine, but there's no financial consequence for that, they don't change their behavior. On the other hand, if they have a high deductible policy where they have to pay the first $5,000 of their doctor visits, then they're going to be motivated to, hey, I better take this pill, I better lose weight, I better start exercising and quit smoking so I don't have to go see the doctor so much. And to me, I think that would be the best way out of this mess. I don't see it ever happening anytime soon because that makes people have to be...
The concept that your health care is supposed to be free is a right.
But it involves some personal responsibility. If I don't take care of myself, then I'm going to be sick more. And I mean, it's job security for me, but just go to the mall, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My latest little thought picture for everyone is pretend you had the time machine from the Terminator movie. And, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I could just snap my fingers right now and everyone in Shasta County would go back 10,000 years. You're standing dripping wet on whatever piece of ground that you're standing on now. How many of those people would be alive in a week?
Mm-hmm.
as they are right now, present day?
Yeah. How many of the modern humans in Shasta County would be alive in a week if I could snap them back 10,000 years?
And you had to actually survive.
I'd say 1 out of 100.
Mm-hmm. It looked like zombie land within 12 hours.
But if you went back 10,000 years, rounded up the Indians that were living here, and brought them to Shasta County today and put them in the middle of the Ishi Wilderness, they would all get out of there. And most of them would be dragging a deer. Well, so
yeah,
that's
right.
That's our design specs. And since we're violating our design specs, we cost the health insurance company tons of money. If you could make the tobacco plant extinct, the health care crisis would be solved. S-O-L-V-E-D, solved. But that's a whole other thing.
That's a spelling bee thing.
Well, and the trick is now they are upping the deductible, but they're upping the cost. I mean, it's like they're just upping the whole... It's like, take it all and just
unbelievable.
Put it up, you know, and then let's ditch the care.
The mentality, too, that somebody, I mean, I have a problem with this phrase that there, you have a right to health care. So do I have a right to basically force Dr. Malotki to come perform services for free on people? He probably does some of that as a nice person and a good man. There's a lot of doctors that do that, but it isn't a requirement. Or does your neighbor, the taxpayer, have a requirement to pay for your right to have that done? I mean, there's a kind of a twisted mentality that people have a right to things beyond the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, which really become pervasive in this country. And so I don't know how. You know, I mean, well, where's the, as you mentioned, the skin in the game or the self-starter aspect? Like, look.
Well, your own body is the best doctor. So if you take care of it, you don't need me. And it's hard for me to talk people into that sometimes. It's hard for me to convince them that they're worth it. But they're worth it.
Interesting.
The moment you don't feel good, it all becomes a lot more worth it. When you have a toothache or a, you know, a kidney stone or anything else, you're going, man, I want to do something better than what we're doing here. And you're the one that helps us get there.
Well, and now that we broke it, who knows if we'll be able to put it back together and or improve it and or do any of that.
Well, I think the goal is single payer. So that's,
yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's the inexorable.
Just imagine your local DMV without an appointment. That's going to be your doctor's office.
Oh, you wrecked it.
With a single payer.
DMV is actually doing a pretty good job when I've been in there.
No, I've always had good luck with them.
Well, they've gotten better,
and now
they do appointments.
But we didn't look at one.
Obamacare is becoming a punchline everywhere. We'll take the word DMV out and just substitute that for when you want to talk in those forms.
Yeah, that's true. We can stop. The DMV is like, please bring on Obamacare. Then we can be like the good guys. What other agencies dream about. We need to take another quick break. You want to hang with us or do you have to go?
Let's hang a little longer.
Okay. Oh, are we doing the Village People? No.
No,
it just says that on the screen. Darn it. Village People are coming, though. I can see it. Bob's got them cued. You're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM.
I called my doctor on the telephone. Help me, doctor, something wrong. I can't shake it, it's gone too far. He said, tell me what your symptoms are.
We're talking with Dr. Richard Malotki, a family practice physician, giving his take on Obamacare. There's a new trend called concierge medicine. Isn't that kind of similar to what you've been doing all along?
Well, you know, not really. There are some similarities. Concierge medicine, the main thing about that is you have patients pay you a bunch of money up front. I think it looks like a bunch of money. And then... And then you're just available for them 24/7.
Okay.
And the problem with that is that you have to be on call. Okay. I mean, you know, and I don't get paid enough to be on call.
Right.
So
now, from a patient's perspective, is that a good thing?
Oh, it's a great thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great thing. And if I was in a group, I would do it.
Okay.
But I'm up by myself.
Yeah, so, you're the only guy.
Yeah, because then you can only, like, you know, it's like when I was delivering babies. I mean, the patients want you to deliver their babies, so
sure.
You can't even really go to the lake with your kids because if somebody's due to pop.
Right. Right.
And that's okay. I like doing it when I was doing it, mm-hmm. but. I don't really want to do that now. Now, concierge doctors make a lot more money than I do.
Okay. How many physicians do you think are going to opt out of Obamacare altogether and go back to pay cash fee for service?
Well, you know, I think there's going to be probably a wide variety of choices. So, you know, I like to work the way I work, but maybe some people like to see 40 people a day.
Yeah.
It's challenging, and, you know, they're smarter than me, and they're better at it than me, so they can do it. But that's just not for me.
But you don't think the patients like that?
I can't imagine. Sometimes patients like it because, like, the patient already knows what's wrong with them. They're sure they know what they want, and they just want a prescription.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they saw the commercial on TV with the really fast talk at the end, and they want one of those.
Well, sometimes, yeah, and there are a certain amount of people where that system will work for them. So, I mean, I, on a whole, I don't know how many doctors are going to want to be an Obamacare doctor.
Well, you become a government employee.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you get a pension, and then you don't have to be accountable because if you do a bad job, you still don't get fired.
And how
That's
many?
Awesome.
And how many true caring physicians that got into medicine because they really want to help people? How many of those are going to end up being satisfied with being a government employee?
Yeah.
Are those the people that are going to get into it? Are those the people that will be willing to do it?
Right. It's. I think because it's less financially, you know, it's even for the specialists, they don't make as much money as they used to. It's less financially rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
I think on one argument, you could say, well, hey, maybe we'll get more of the higher altruistic type people and not just the people that were looking to make a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, I've been a doctor for a long time. I knew my classmates really good. I know most of my, you know, physicians here in town pretty good. I don't know any of them that went into it for the money.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, no, it's kind of a yucky job just for the money. You could do something else.
Well,
sure.
You know, but it's a wonderful job. But the money is not the best part.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even in the running.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so we've only got a couple of minutes here before we get to the top of the hour. So, Doug, before we let you go about your day, what do you think the congressional land's going to do for this?
Well, you know, again, we're in a situation back there where you have different political or philosophical views in the House versus the Senate versus the White House. And so many of us on the R side don't think Obamacare ever did have a chance to work correctly or to sustain a good health care system in the country. You know, like what doctors is talking about is that do people all want the doc in the box approach? You know, well, sometimes I do. You know, I'm not a very patient, so I just want to get in out as quick as possible. If it's something small, the 40 patient per day thing could work, or however often. But other people need that different kind of care. So the bottom line, in a free enterprise system, people have choices. And this is taking away choices, and it's chasing many of our physicians out of the business where they don't want to come into the business to begin with. As you mentioned, you know, you have government employee doctors as opposed to the ones that have the freedom to determine what kind of practice they would like and does that serve their patients well.
Right.
So what we're battling for really is the freedom to have that. So we've enacted legislation in a polarized atmosphere to say we can't repeal Obamacare because there is the political wherewithal to do that. So we've tried for a one-year delay. We've tried to say, let's hold off on this thing that's collapsing around us from actually be the law of the land until later, you know? So
all right, we want
that's the compromise.
And we want you to keep doing that. Do that and more of it. All right. Thanks, Doug. Thanks, Congressman.
Thank you.
Have an awesome day.
Okay, we're back. You had your 5 minutes. I hope you got your coffee. Got your coffee settled in for the second hour of We the People Radio. You are listening to Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin, our show producer and musical savant. We're talking about Obamacare today. We had Congressman Doug LaMalfa on the line for the first hour, giving us some congressional updates and weighing in on the Affordable Care Act. And we have Dr. Richard Malotki, who is a family physician in the Shasta County area, who actually has always had a different approach to medicine. And so we're weighing in with Dr. Malotki about Obamacare, how it's going to impact his practice, how it will impact patients, and just an all-around discussion.
So if they disallow people, you know, I know in Canada and some of the other places, you're not allowed to just pay cash for service.
Correct.
So that makes, and that, I mean, that's a game changer.
Well, yeah, that would, then I'd end up, you know, being a fishing guide, I guess.
You know. Do you anticipate that?
I don't know. I mean, I think when they first brought out the plan in Massachusetts, there was a bill introduced in the Massachusetts state legislature that was going to force all doctors to be a provider under this plan or lose their license. And it didn't pass. But, I think the federal government would probably like that to be, the current administration would like that to conscript everyone.
Neck it all down into one.
Well, they want single payer, but as far as their relationship with the doctors, they just want the doctors all to toe the line, and they don't want anybody not.
And you know, the thing about a single payer system, cool, which is basically more appropriately a single provider, i.e., the government. You know, I've had conversations with people in the past who've traveled to other countries, or maybe even temporarily lived in other countries, and maybe they broke an arm, they broke a finger, they, you know, had a cough, something minor. They go in, they get it handled, doesn't cost them anything, they leave. They think that that's what it's always going to be like. Now, generally speaking, those people were not taxpayers in those countries, nor did they have a serious illness that required ongoing treatment and was astronomically expensive. That's where the system, I believe, will break down.
Well, yeah, there's lots of moral dilemmas involved in the delivery of medical care. It's just like, you know, the government is, I think, wise in one way as far as encouraging or at least paying for hospice services, for instance, because, you know, when you're going to die and we can't do anything about it, there's no reason for you to be laying there in the hospital and having a bunch of tubes shoved in you. I mean, you wouldn't do it to your dog.
No.
But we still do it to people now, and we need a dialogue about, you know, not this death panel thing. We need to have a dialogue about end-of-life care, because that's, you know, where all the money's being spent right now.
Yeah, we kind of pretend like, I mean, like, you know, I bought my funeral plan when I was, I don't know, 21, and people said, well, that's weird.
And morbid.
I'm like, well, I'm actually going to use that. Like, I'm hoping my house doesn't burn down. I'm not planning on a car accident, but I'm completely going to die. So, you know, I mean, I don't think that's all that weird. And Robert is asking over and over and over, although I already know the answer. He keeps asking over and over in the chat room, if you ask people, basically the question is, he had several people tell him that doctors are asking about guns on the sign up when they go to their doctor. So I don't know if it's like, do they own guns?
What kind of personal information are patients required to give currently?
Well, I mean,
I told your nurse I was carrying a gun and she subtracted it off the weight.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, man, I love it here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as far, no, we don't ask questions about guns. I think they would like, I mean, I don't know. I don't probably want to go there.
Are you a little put on the spot?
No, it's just that I don't do, do paper charts, so I'm not electronic record.
Nice.
So none of my patient's information goes into any blogosphere.
Okay, so here's a question. Are you required to go electronic, or is that still a choice?
Oh, you're required to go electronic if you want to bill Medicare.
Ah, nice.
And
okay.
See, and some of the big insurance companies are playing along, too, because they want to force everyone to go electronic, mm-hmm. because some Harvard MBA has convinced them that they're going to save a bunch of money by this economy of scale of knowing every little thing about mm-hmm. everybody. And
his question further says, that people were asked if they had a loaded weapon in their house. Do you care if we have a loaded weapon in our house?
Or do you know of other doctors that are asking that question?
You know, I don't know of anybody that's asking that question.
Oh, right on.
Okay. Now, and here's a thought. I've had conversations with people who feel that the electronic system is really good because wherever you happen to be in your travels, if you've got a medical history and you have an emergency, that wherever you end up, whatever facility you end up at in your travels, they would be able to access your medical history almost instantaneously. My question is, with the Obamacare website and, you know, the exchange websites, how could we even believe that that could be feasible if they can't handle what they've got now electronically?
Well, I think there already are ways to do what you're asking about. Because, yes, it's wonderful if the doctor, like when I worked in an emergency room for 2 years, if I had a real thorough history about the patient's meds that they were on and all that, if I knew that when they brought them in after the car wreck, I could take better care of them.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an app for that. So you just, now you got to get a phone. But if you can swing getting one of those smartphones, you just put all your medical information on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
when you go into the ER, someone pushes one button, they can see what you're on. So
you
don't have to put it into a national cloud
database.
Yeah. It can be something that, again, you would have to be personally responsible for it. And, you know, we don't want to.
Well, you know, that's not politically correct, didn't you know?
We wouldn't want to require too much of that.
Yeah.
I used to carry it printed. I still do.
Yeah.
I carry it printed. Mm-hmm. What medication I take, because if I wind up in the ER, it's because I can't breathe, so I can't talk.
Right.
So it's kind of limiting if you.
Wear a bracelet, too?
But all it says is I'm allergic to peanuts and.
Okay.
Then I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. So mostly I wouldn't get to the hospital on that one.
Doctor, do you know what the name of the phone app is? What you're talking
about? No, I don't. I don't.
We'll look it
I think
up.
That's a great idea. You're carrying your medical records around with you.
Sure. Well, it should be your responsibility.
Well, you'd think so. I mean, it gets back to that history. If I ask patients pointed questions about this, that, and the other thing, and they know all the answers, boy, can I do a better job? You know, but if they can't remember what meds they're on, or they think they were allergic to something, but they don't know for sure, boy, it puts us in a tough spot sometimes.
So this is sort of an obscure question, but you have not gone electronic. Do you have any feel for the percentage of physicians? Well, nationwide's kind of a reach, but what percentage would you say have not gone electronic? Who have stuck?
I'd say 10.
10%, okay.
Holdouts?
I'd say 10.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once they do, because there's I know that the push is to shift toward like nurse practitioner type folks to do family practice.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of I know a nurse practitioner and they wouldn't cover any of her billing. I mean, they're not handled in the Obamacare land of billing. I mean, they're getting like $6 for an office visit type thing. Is that pretty?
I don't know the answers to that. I've never had a nurse practitioner. There's a lot of great nurse practitioners in Reading. So, and nurse practitioners do a really good job, especially the more experience they get, because our job is about experience and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you get that, then you can do a great job. It doesn't matter whether there's an MD behind your name. But
do you think, looking forward, that the medical professionals serving patients will have the same level and quality of education that you had?
I don't know.
Especially if you end up a single payer?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
So somebody in here wanted to know if you're going to have physician assistants. So a PA and a nurse practitioner, what's the difference between them?
I don't know the specific differences.
I don't either.
There's an NP and a PA. Yeah.
Yeah, and there are differences, and I should know that stuff, but I don't.
Well, you don't have those
because
in your
you
practice.
Don't use them.
I guess I was just randomly curious if those were.
Well, they've gradually. What's been happening is they've been getting more and more. You know, been able to get more and more responsibility because there's fewer and fewer. You know, family doctors.
Oh, yeah, and that's true.
Okay, so how many new folks are getting into the field? I mean, you know, are there? I don't know about attorneys. I think they still have a lot of law students every year. But
I don't know nationwide statistics because again, I just I go to work every day and come home. So, but I like my son graduated from medical school 30 mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. And his class was 160. Traditionally, like when I was going to school, they were always shooting for having about 33% of mm-hmm. the medical school graduates be primary care. Mm-hmm. In his class of 160, 15 went into family practice.
Yikes. Wow.
But that's just because the writing's on the wall. I mean, mm-hmm. the government, see, why would you run that gauntlet when you can do 4 years of college and a year and a half of nursing school and become a nurse practitioner?
Sure.
Why would you spend the 7 extra years and all that money mm-hmm. and all that...
That
and,
you could never pay back.
And study your butt off and eat ramen noodles the whole time. Why would you do that?
And then you get married, try to raise a family, and pay off student loans.
Yeah, and it's
and run it a, works run a out, practice.
Worked out. I pinch myself every day. It worked out great for me.
And what's your son going to be when he grows up?
He's in his third year of residency, and he's going to be a plastic surgeon.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, so you guys will be able to do primary care.
Dentistry.
But it's not just dentistry.
I told him to hurry
like a
up.
Toothmaker.
Yeah, he has 3 years to go, and he has to hurry up because I need him now.
So you can look like a...
No.
What's her face?
At my age, you don't care about how you look. You just care about how you feel.
I know, but isn't it funny? Like,
you know, you've got that right.
Like Joan Rivers, so you can have like permanent surprise face.
Yeah.
And the permanent deer in the headlights.
Yeah, she has that like surprise look all the time.
Yeah, it might be fun.
Wow.
Yeah, no, he's doing great. I'm so proud of him. We're so lucky.
Oh, that's nice.
And where's he going to school?
He's in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
Too far away. It's a beautiful place, but it's too far away.
Yeah.
But it's a good place for his residency. It's right, Dayton is right in the middle of where, like, there's three big college towns, you know, Cincinnati and Columbus and Indianapolis, and all the drug dealers live in Dayton. So... they get a lot of, you know, gunshot wounds and stabs and, you know, a lot
of... really good for business.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people going through the windshields of cars.
Great practice.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
what do you think? I mean, how do you think we learn how to do what we do?
Yeah, you got to break people before
counting on that segment of society.
Well, and in fact, if you want to talk about medical costs, talk about that. I mean, people have no idea. Like, the idea that that you're not going to get medical care in this country if you're poor... if you're standing on a street corner in New York City next to Bill Gates and somebody tries to assassinate him and he shoots both of you, Bill Gates and you, in the chest, you both fall on the sidewalk, and you have no money and, you know, you're down on your luck, and Bill Gates, of course, you know,
has everybody's money.
Well, he earned it.
Yes.
But you'll both get taken to the hospital in an ambulance, lickety-split. You'll both get really, really good medical care. You'll get the same high-quality CT scan. You'll get the same high-quality suture. The surgeons who work on you are going to be highly qualified. They're going to save your butt. And it's going to cost, you know, $600,000 to $800,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if everybody was required to carry, even the guy that was down on his luck, if everyone was required to carry that $5,000 catastrophic policy, all those $600-$800 million disasters that happen every day in this country would be covered instead of having to be paid for by you and I, because the taxpayers, of course, are already picking up.
Sure,
we're already picking up the price for that. So, it's.
But are we picking, I mean, I'd be very curious to know, and I don't think that number's out there on purpose, actually. I wonder how much it costs us to provide care to people who don't have insurance versus what it's going to be now.
Oh, I don't know that answer.
I don't think you could do the math, because they don't want us to have the numbers. But
that's why the system is so screwed up, because you see this cost-shifting thing, that paradigm started in the 60s, you know, when most people were working, and, you know, a lot of people, there was still a lot of industrial stuff in this nation, and everybody, you know, people had a job, and if you had a job, you know, they charged you just a little bit more to cover the people that didn't have a job, and the trouble is the number of people that aren't putting into the system is getting bigger and bigger, and the number of people that are putting in is getting smaller and smaller.
Well, and, you know, just the way that, you know, this is rolling out, at least now, it looks like with the Affordable Care Act, you're insuring the uninsured and uninsuring the insured.
Correct.
So they're going to end up with the same number of uninsured.
Our health insurance was dropped. As of December 7th, I'll have no health insurance.
Same thing, yes. And mine has been dropped as well.
So as long as you have a primary care issue or a dental issue, you guys are covered, but outside of that, you're well, like
on your own.
Yeah, I'm just going to let myself die.
I'm going to let myself die.
Might be a little easier.
I'm going to give myself permission. No, it is. Sorry, are we supposed to take a break?
We are on radio.
We're like all, you know, we have like in-studio guests. It's so rare, so we're just all sitting here chatting.
We just chat.
Completely forget we're
on informal Sunday morning chat.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, so quick break, eh? So we can get in all the music, all the ads, all the stuff. We'll be right back with you in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM.
We've got you covered.
Affordably.
Dr. Mike.
To my brother to ask for a loan, 'cause I was busted. I hate to beg like a dog without its bone, but I'm busted. My brother said there ain't a thing I can do. My wife and my kids are all down with the flu, and I was just thinking about calling on you, and I'm busted.
We're back. You know, Bob.
The golden Obamacare oldie.
Hey, so there have been stories out there in cyber world about folks that have serious cancer issues, and they are finding that their treatments are going to be canceled.
No, it's not just stories. My daughter is still in school, and one of her classmates, her brother, lost his insurance, and he has this very rare kind of cancer that he was getting experimental treatments for, which were working. But since they're, you know, how the insurance companies deny coverage is by saying, oh, we think your treatment is experimental. Well, what they're really saying is, we know it's real expensive because it's by these special new biological treatments are very, very expensive. Anyway, so yeah, that kid's gonna die.
Okay, so
really,
so that leaves me.
He's lost his insurance. He can't afford to pay for the new insurance, and new insurance won't cover his treatment anyway.
Oh, crap. So basically, then, and that leads me to my question: what do you see in terms of serious illness, expensive tests, the availability of MRIs and CT scans? I mean, all of the stuff that goes along with treatment for serious illness. Where do you see that landing?
Well, it's already gotten very difficult for us to order tests, like for my own patients. And I think a decent way to explain it is it's sort of like my job is a little bit like playing Battleship, okay? So if you think someone has gallstones, and I'm at this point in my life, I'm pretty good at figuring that out, but it's still tricky. It's tricky. I'll think, hey, I'm going to do one of that gallbladder ultrasound. You know, I want to have that test. I want to see if there's gallstones in there. And I think my hit percentage is really good. The government keeps track, or the insurance companies keep track of all that stuff now about how many tests you order and what's your hit percentage. Because, you know, if it has gallstones, then you did an appropriate test. But if it didn't, well, gee, we wish you wouldn't have spent that money. You know what I mean?
And so then do they...
Well, I think, you know, if they've been saying for years that they would like to pay us for performance, I would love that. Because then if you really were doing a good job and your patients are healthy and none of them are ever in the hospital, maybe you get paid more. Wow, wouldn't that be great? You know, the government's never done any preventive stuff. I mean, Medicare doesn't cover
an
annual physical.
They
don't cover it.
Well, the other thing, the government's not, I mean, you know, let's face it, I don't care where you are on this issue or any other issue, or even if you like the government for what ungodly reason that would be, they suck at pay for performance. You know, they don't pay themselves for performance.
Right.
We see that all the time. You know, back to the VA, you know, their incentives aren't for performance. You know, when you hear all this stuff about, you know, all these bonuses and stuff, the bonus is for denying claims. So, what kind of performance is that? All you got to do is show up for that one.
It makes me fly into a rage, takes away all my fun.
So for all those people that I've chatted with that thought getting, you know, a broken finger covered in Europe somewhere for free, that's going to be what universal health care looks like. That's so not true.
Well, or,
if you break something,
you know,
fine, but
a lot of Canadians that need a total hip fly to India and do it, you know, because they're on a waiting list that's, you know, 6 years long.
And don't they put a moratorium on the number of tests available, like MRIs?
Well, even like the Blue Cross Blue Shield, like those patients, It used to be, I think, that the insurance companies would just trust me if I wanted to get... They did. If I ordered a test, they'd think, hey, the doctor thinks it's necessary, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And now we have to have 8 faxes back and forth over about a 2-week period to get an MRI approved.
Wow.
And I know what the diagnosis is. I need the MRI to prove it so that we can get the right surgery or take care of the problem. And
now, are waiting times for surgeries, tests, that type of thing, are those increasing since the Affordable Care Act came into play, or are there wait times just because of the volume of patients that doctors are having to see?
Because
I hear about people waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that. You know, like for me, if I want to, you know, foot on the gas test, we just do it. And we send them I have a form letter that we send to the insurance company saying we're going to sue them for all the tea in China.
Okay.
If they don't cover it. But we just do the test anyway because sometimes it's the foot on the gas.
Yeah.
And
well, I was chatting with some folks. I think they work for an oncologist. I won't mention names, but there's a physician in town who has decided to take the exchange patients, which would be Medicaid, Medi-Cal, and apparently since the Affordable Care Act, these patients are only allowed to have one test per day. So let's say you've got a Medi-Cal, Medicaid patient that lives, an hour out of town, and they have to drive into Reading to have their testing done. They're only allowed one test a day. They may need more than one test, which means they either stay overnight or they drive back. Their funds are very limited as it is. And this is something apparently that has come down the pike since Obamacare.
Well, it's government driven, but an insurance company driven, but there's still a lot of rules like that. Like on a Medicare patient, if there's 2 skin cancers, I can cut 2 off in one visit, but I can't bill for 2. You can only bill for 1.
Okay.
So,
why?
Oh, because like 30 years ago, some Russian mafia got a hold of a doctor's license and started submitting false claims to Medicare saying that they cut 30 basal cells off of a homeless person, in the south side of L.A. And since now they can't find that homeless person, and $12 or $15 million later they realize that it was a big Medicare fraud. So most of the rules, a lot of the onerous rules in Medicare are because the government's trying to prevent fraud.
Okay.
It's like 1 out of 100 doctors says they do an EKG on every patient. Because of that, you know, that 1% of doctors, 99% are honest.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that 1%, I can't get the $75 that I want for an EKG from the government.
Wow.
You know, it's been 75 since I've been working all 29 years, and I know how to read them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they come into my office with chest pain and they want me to tell them if they're having an acid reflux or a heart attack, I need to do that EKG, thank you. And they pay me $12,
wow,
which is less than my nursing time.
Wow.
I mean, a machine costs $12,000. Mm-hmm. But then that same person with chest pain goes to the ER. The ER bills $300 for that EKG, and they get it. That's how screwed up it is.
Yeah.
But it's funny, we were having
a whole ER discussion.
Well, it just made an office, it made the office practice of medicine, you know, it's just more difficult. It's more difficult. So then what you have to do is you have to start seeing more patients because...
It always goes back to that, doesn't it?
Well, yeah.
Volume.
You have to pay your overhead. The meter's running.
Sure.
You know, the government requires me to treat my employees in a certain way, and I like buying, in fact, I'm still allowed to buy their health insurance. I'm not allowed to buy mine anymore, but their policies weren't canceled.
Really?
Just
okay.
Mine, yeah.
And that's kind of interesting because, you know, there have been, what's the number now on the number of private policies that have been dropped? It's over 5 million.
Oh, yeah, it was upward of 5 million.
Okay. And then they're saying that coming next year, toward fall, they're anticipating 50 to 100 million. Policies being dropped in the workplace.
But then people, once they start looking at what they can, you know, what they can pull on these exchanges or what's available, you start looking at $5,000 to $10,000 deductible, and you know, $600, $700, $800, $900, $1,100 a month.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
And the congressional budget.
Pay both of those.
Yeah, and the Congressional Budget Office has determined that, and I don't know what the year is, but within a very short period of time, the average family will pay $20,000 a year in their medical care,
yeah,
which is basically insurance.
Well,
and
it's kind of funny because I looked at ours, and you know that savings that everyone was supposed to have, wasn't it $2,500 a year per
mm-hmm,
family they
right.
were all going to save? We're going to actually shell out probably double that with the
wow.
new policy. And you
yeah,
go,
yeah.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
You know, you can't. You really
well, and so if you're
going to
have, if you're going to have 50 to 100 million personal policies dropped in the workplace because they're no longer, because they extended the employer mandate a year. They put that off, so that's going to go into effect next year unless they decide to roll it again.
Don't
but,
just wonder about all
well,
that.
Well, they
though.
Want to wait till the 14 election.
Yeah, they want it, yeah.
Until after.
But can you imagine 50 to 100 million people in a panic that just lost their health care through their employers trying to get onto these exchanges when the 5 million can't get onto it now? I mean, that's just going to be a nightmare.
It should be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I know, and I'm just going to sit back and watch the implosion.
If you're not on the chat, you know, speaking of that, right here on the chat room, what do you get when a terrorist starts a fast food restaurant? Bomb in the box, Jack.
Who was that? Was that Bill?
That was, I wanted to say it was Dr. Strangelove because he's on the chat room right now, mm-hmm. but that was Tatanka.
Oh, good one. Good one, TT.
So for the people who are not on the chat room, that's what you are missing.
Yeah, it's very funny.
It's all on there, and everybody starts changing their chat names to Dr. somebody or other, but Dr. Strangelove, I got to say, was like the best
okay,
one.
So has Obamacare affected the cost of supplies? Because I've heard, I was told by my veterinarian, and I've had other people tell me that their vets said that their pet care expenses would be going up because there are a lot of supplies and implements that are medically related across the board that, because there's an excise, there's a tax put on too.
Right. Yeah, there's going to be, I think January 1st, there's quite a few new taxes that are going to be mm-hmm. levied, which people mm-hmm. haven't discovered yet.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I guess the thing, and I sit back and I scratch my head because, you know, I'm of average intelligence, but I... But
that's not what I was told. That's...
What were you told?
I was told it was way above average.
Really? By who, me?
Dan.
Dan? Dan told you that? Aw, he hates to admit it, but he's right. No, I'm just kidding. I know he's listening. So anyway, so we sit
Dan's
back...
Like, what?
We sit back and we watch all of this, and we knew how it was going to unroll, and you know, we were affected as well, but I'm not devastated because I expected it. I knew it was coming, and, you know, all those people out there that bought the hype, you know, that actually thought and believed.
I don't think they believed it, do you?
I don't know. Maybe they just
really thought we could actually insure everybody for less money.
I mean, who pays for it?
I mean, that's totally stupid.
They never stop and ask themselves who pays for it.
That's like
inviting. We're already paying for it, but you know, through this, you mm-hmm. know, through our higher premiums, that's how it happens. But yeah, this is just going to shift around how and who pays for it.
Right.
And it's going to charge the people that are.
Well, they were counting on
more money,
and they were counting on the young, healthy people to jump on board with this.
Exactly.
Those millennials, they're not stupid.
I like the part about how everything on the news and everything. How'd you like to be those guys? Everything was, we've got to get them.
Yeah.
We have to get them.
Yeah.
You don't do that. Even advertisers know that. You can't you're talking about how you got to go get people.
Yeah. And they're like, we didn't have it before. We're not getting it now. We'll pay the $95.
It is interesting, though, how many are paying attention because everybody thinks mm-hmm. those folks are missing it.
They're not.
I was in Verizon the other day, and the kid was 20-something.
Mm-hmm.
Young man was 20-something, I should say. And I said, so how's Obamacare working out? You know, my question of the
don't
day.
Don't you love it?
Ask everybody, hey, how's Obamacare working out? And he was like, this is ridiculous. It's going to cost us a fortune. I mean, just again.
Yeah. Well, I had a fantastic conversation with a young woman in her 20s. She was a server at C.R. Gibbs, and this was about 6 months ago. And we were chatting about all of this, and she was so in the know. But what she's doing and a lot of her her friends and her peers are doing is they're going the natural route. They're paying very close attention to their diet, to what they're eating, to their habits.
Yeah.
I mean, those young...
Good idea.
I know. But they're really in... The young folks are really into that.
Yeah.
Many of them know that there's a relationship there, and they honestly, they're very independent, and they do not want to be controlled.
Right.
So the young people are aware. They communicate differently than we do. Their method of getting information back and forth is different than ours. But they know what's going on. Unfortunately, a lot of them voted for the problem, but that's a whole other show.
Yeah, but I think people are, I really do think people are figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
There are not a lot of people anymore. You know, have you guys met anybody who said they thought this whole thing was working out well?
Yeah, I've met a couple.
Yeah. Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I keep asking. I'm not meeting them. I think they're lying to me.
I was in a clothing store one day, and I was in the dressing room, and I heard this little conversation going on. It was all about Obamacare. And I was in the dressing room. I was not part of the conversation. And the people behind the counter and the customers are all talking about it. And so, I'm a listener and I'm a watcher. And I kind of picked out through the curtain who I was going to chat with when I came out. And there was one woman that said she was going to be able to get on one of the exchanges and that she didn't make a lot of money. And so she thought this was going to be a great thing for her. So when I came out of the dressing room, I struck up a conversation with her and I asked her about what she'd said. And she goes, yeah, this is going to be really great. I'm going to get on the exchange and I'm going to get my health care for free. And I said, so have you gotten on to the exchange yet? And she goes, no. She goes, I talked to an insurance agent, and they told me just to wait till after the first of the year. And I thought, well, okay, so you are in for a few surprises, but that's all right. And I said, so you're getting your health care for free. Who's going to pay for it? And, you know, she knew right then and there. So she very quickly said, well, I paid taxes all these years, so that's what's going to pay for it.
They've been storing it up. Her money they've been keeping.
Yes, in a special account.
They haven't been wasting her money.
Yeah, hers they put into a special account.
Yeah.
So there, and you know, and you could tell that her response to me was, okay, I'm going to tell you what you want to hear. I don't quite believe it myself, but you put me on the spot, so I'm going to have to give this answer. She knew. She wouldn't admit it.
They all know, and the doctors all know, mm-hmm. and the insurance. I should have to be an insurance guy right now. That's, I don't know. I think it almost sucks worse than being the doctors.
Yeah.
I just like to give everybody the bad news.
Because all those insurance people are going to be needing new jobs before too long. They really will be.
Yeah, they've got who's going to be working for the government.
Yeah, they've got to know that.
All right, we have to take a quick break because we're kind of suck at breaks today. Don't we, Bob? Just say it. Say it, Bob. You know you want to.
We suck at breaks today.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
We'll be right back with you over here at We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in. I found my mind in a brown paper bag. But then I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Oh, I love it.
What a fool believes. You know what? Okay, this is not nice, but we've never been known to be politically correct.
Or nice.
I saw something on Facebook, and I'm back in a relationship with Facebook again. I broke up with
them.
And then I'm dating them again. But I saw something on there
love
yesterday
to be abused, don't you?
That said, God must love stupid people because he made so many of them. I'm like, I'm sorry, I just really think that's funny.
Actually, either that or he hates us because he gave us all this logic and everything.
I know it. Hey, so we were talking about you getting out of Medicare. And, okay, so I've had conversations with older folks, and their names shall remain unmentioned, who think that they're safe and secure and nothing's changed for them because they're on Medicare. And you personally broke up with Medicare, and you say that more and more doctors are doing that. So what's the future for those patients?
Well,
that you can tell?
Yeah, I think the Medicare for the patients is good, you know. And they get sick, everything's covered.
Yeah.
You know, from their point of view, they love it. And why wouldn't you?
Sure, and they paid into it.
Oh, yeah, you bet. You bet they
paid
into it.
It's not an entitlement.
But, you know, the real losers in that Medicare situation right now through the Affordable Care Act are the ones that are losing that Medicare Advantage. See, the Medicare Advantage was a really good sort of this co-insurance option that would allow them to, you know, have a better better kind of coverage, you know, for less money, and they've decimated that.
Mm-hmm. So what do you anticipate? Just, you know, because, you know, you're in the circle of other doctors. You know, you hear things, you talk, you go to conferences. How many doctors are going to pull out of Medicare?
Well, I haven't talked to a doctor that likes Medicare okay. for probably about 10 years.
Okay. Do you see it being affected by Obamacare?
No, because I think eventually it's going to, I think eventually the Obamacare thing is not going to last very long because it's not sustainable under its own weight. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I think it's going to end up being a single payer and basically everyone will be on Medicare, I think, eventually.
But
something like
except
that.
Except you broke up with them. So when you sent them, you were telling us on the
break. I still see lots of Medicare patients.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
But they pay out of pocket?
They pay cash.
So, yeah. Okay, so from this patient's perspective, Medicare is great, and that's wonderful, and that's what I've heard. And if you feel that Obamacare will break under its own weight and eventually everybody will be, you know, a Medicare patient, is it sustainable for everyone to be a Medicare patient and to get the quality of care and no cost that they're getting now? So that's what I see changing. How can that continue if everyone ends up in the same boat?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. That's the $64,000.
Yeah, that's
question.
Just me thinking ahead and you know, logically.
I don't know what's going to happen, and you know, it'll be interesting.
Not awesome. So there.
If Obamacare goes under, what happens to all the money they raided from Medicare to pay for Obamacare?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that just went to the people that designed that really complex website.
Yeah.
It ended up in Canada.
Okay. I wonder if they paid them before or if they had a performance bond on there.
And I'm not going to get completely off topic here, but you know that in terms of voting, okay, there was a federal law passed a few years back that every state was required to have a statewide database of all of their registered voters, okay? And California is the only state that has never complied with the HAVA rule. So the state of California has no statewide database, which makes it really easy to go from county to county to county to county and vote everywhere you go. Well, they have just now hired the same company that built the Obamacare.
Oh, stop it.
I'm not kidding. They have now just hired the same company that built the Obamacare website to build the statewide database voter registration website for the state of California. Just so you know.
Insert your own punchline here.
Holy crap, Batman.
Ah, very good. I like that.
That's my punchline.
Just thought I'd share that.
God. What? Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding.
It's remarkable.
It's the truth.
When did that happen? I mean,
just
obviously,
very recently.
So they already knew that they sucked. We already knew they sucked before we hired them to put together Obamacare.
So they got the contract. And I just heard about it like within the last 2 weeks. And just in time for the 2014 elections. How nice will that be?
God, that's awesome.
It was probably a competitive bid, don't you think?
A competitively,
And obviously we checked their track record.
I, me, and myself.
What do you mean? These people put together Obamacare.
Yeah. Well, I don't even.
And I wonder what that's going to cost the state of California taxpayers.
Yeah.
Well, and what's really going to happen then? So before 2014, as a registered voter, you have to go on to this website and miraculously all your votes disappear? I don't know. I see.
We're fundamentally changing the fabric of America.
Yes, we are.
That was the stated intention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's working out.
And he did not mince words. He said it. I will fundamentally transform America. I warned you.
Yeah. Wow. God, that's frustrating.
Yeah. Huh. I had an opening there, so I thought I'd throw it in.
Yeah. I'm stunned. I guess I don't even know.
I know.
And who makes that decision? I guess the legislature makes that decision.
California Secretary of State.
That's fantastic.
Deborah Bowen.
What?
Phone call.
Oh, phone call. 2 minutes. 2 minutes before the last break that we're supposed to take at 10 till.
Somebody's been holding it in for almost 2 hours, and they can't stand it anymore.
Oh, by the way, I just want you to know I gave Mike Adams a hard time for calling us at one minute till the hour last night.
Nice.
He's like, well, I'm not looking at the clock.
You should be.
And all of a sudden the phone rings. The music started, and the phone rings. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Could it call us now? Oh, my God.
So you're going to be sitting pretty.
Well,
he's still going to be our doctor. Yay.
Well, yeah, no, I'm gonna keep working until I get good at it, and that's probably going to take me another 20 years, I think.
Because
I'm slowly getting better at my job.
Nice.
But I am. I mean,
are you taking new patients?
Hard job.
Yeah, except for you didn't believe me when I told you about my allergies, huh? He scoffed. Well, he thought I was exaggerating, as I am prone to do. However,
she is very flamboyant.
The paper came back and it was like, oh,
it was it was like the shower scene from Psycho.
It was so funny. I'm like,
we have a caller.
You're going to be shocked.
Are we taking new callers?
What? Are we taking new callers?
That's up to you. You're the one that says we have a break.
Well, he's the doctor.
Oh, whatever.
Are we taking new callers?
Yeah. All right. This is Nicole with a question for Dr. Malotki.
Sure. Fire away, Nicole.
Oh, yes. Good morning. I would like to ask the doctor if he writes for any medical magazines or if he's writes for any paper or something like that. And also I'd like to know if we're going to be cut off from visiting doctors and everything, what is the best medical magazine he would recommend?
Those are both two really good questions. The best medical magazines, probably if you're on the internet, you have access to quite a few different websites that are pretty good. If you're not on the internet, I can't really think of a medical magazine that I read that it would be very helpful to you. Most of the medical magazines are full of jargon and advertisements for
and
pharmaceuticals.
Medical ease.
Yeah, and for as far as staying out of the doctor's office anyway, do work on those things that your mom told you to do, years ago. Take care of yourself, eat right, be at or near your ideal body weight. Try to get some exercise every day. If you smoke, make your husband chain you to the bed for a couple weeks and slide a pizza under the door every night. And after 2 weeks, you'll be through the withdrawal.
I just want to know how you get to the pizza if you chain to the bed.
Well,
I don't know, but
there's a long chain. And I'm sorry, I forgot your first question.
Do you write for medical?
I used to write a column for the Record Searchlight, our local paper, and I did that for about 6 years, and then I don't do that anymore. But I still write. I'm writing a sci-fi book right now, which is kind of weird.
So you're kind of Obamacare.
Pardon?
Did you call it Obamacare? Was it 20 and pages long?
I'm still stuck on the title, so I don't know.
So you're a geek.
Yeah, I'm a physics nerd is what I am.
Are you? Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oops.
I believe we lost her.
I hope we answered your question, Nicole.
Nicole got the, the Medicare thing there, the kind where you get, what's the one where nobody takes it? Uh-huh. Not Medicare. What's the other one? Medi-Cal?
Medi-Cal.
Yeah.
So hasn't Medi-Cal been rolled into Medicaid California?
Yes, yeah. I saw a pretty informative program at Rotary the other day about that, how they're trying to transform Medi-Cal.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the things that...
Is that good or bad?
Well, the intentions that were, again, this whole idea that, yes, we're going to have it all be electronically governed so we don't spend too much money, we'll get rid of repetitive things, and we'll improve quality of care and all that kind of stuff because of the electronic record. Supposedly, they're going to try to encourage primary care people to work for them again.
Mm.
Because when I was first in town, we did some Medi-Cal just because it seemed like the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, every year, and I think it was September or October, every year they'd send us a letter that they were out of money.
Mm-hmm.
This is Medi-Cal.
So they couldn't pay you.
Yeah,
Sorry.
And they owe you, maybe $5,000 or $6,000 or something. And they'd say, well, hey, we're not going to pay you, and you can't recover this money. You have to see the patients for the rest of the year free.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can start submitting bills again next January.
Mm-hmm.
And they just did that every year to us. And
we were trying
to do the right
thing. So now they're trying to woo you back because they created hasn't worked?
Well, no, see, it's you can't afford to do it because you get paid.
Right.
Well,
it sounds like Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah.
It all sounds like Atlas Shrugged. Freaky. Thanks, Nicole, for your call, by the way. We always have this caller thing going on.
Now, Dr. Malotki, did you mention a specific site on the internet or sites that you could go to for that sort of information?
I kind of like WebMD. I think that's pretty good. I'm not a super, computer guy either, so I don't spend a lot of time on it. But WebMD is pretty, and the other one that's really pretty good is the Mayo Clinic website.
Mm-hmm.
They have very clear, easy to understand advice and a pretty good navigable website. So if you've got some symptoms,
I've checked out that site.
Yeah.
It's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, on that note,
don't be afraid to be informed about your body. Mm-hmm. You know, the more you know about how things work, the better you can take care of yourself. And really, when we're talking about good health care, it starts with yourself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, I mean, I'm not close to being as good a doctor as your own body is. Not even close. It's such a miracle. What our body does for us every day is a complete miracle. And it's lost on most people.
Yeah, that's true. We always bitch about the parts that don't work.
Oh, my gosh. You know,
but there's
so,
a ton that does.
It's, I mean, your
even
heart,
on me,
your
there
heart
are things
beats,
that work.
Well, your heart beats 3 million times a month.
Yeah.
I mean,
really?
If they make a door... A new door on a car in General Motors, they design a machine that opens and closes the door to check the hinge.
Mm-hmm.
But after a million times, the door falls off. Your heart beat 3 million times last month.
Yeah.
Your knees have gone through many more than a million cycles.
Well, trust me, I feel that.
Yeah, well, right, but...
We have to take a break and commiserate about that.
Yeah.
One quick last break before the top of the hour. All right, we're talking about Obamacare and health and stuff here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
Show me how you do it.
Yeah, I see that.
The one who cheats on me, I teach me love. Never better man, make me a honky-tonk angel. Teach me cheat. I finally made it through med school. Somehow.
Somehow.
I'm just an intern, I still make a mistake or two. I was last in my class, barely passed at the institute. Now I'm trying to avoid. Yeah, I'm trying to avoid a malpractice suit. Hey, like a serpent.
So that's the essential word, Al Yankovic.
Yankovic.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Yankovic.
Yeah,
the essential. I like the essential. So is there any, I'm noticing and personally experiencing an increase and a movement toward natural medicine, herbs and essential oils and you know, raw foods and that type of thing. And there, I think there is a trend that people are kind of heading back that way.
Yes.
Do you agree with it? And is there a place?
Yeah, there's more than a cottage industry based on all that stuff. There's a lot of money to be made in that.
Okay.
So, and patients, and people ask all the time about that and, or, gee, should I try this? Should I try that? And I always tell them, hey, if you try it and it makes you feel better, go ahead and
mm-hmm.
do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ordinarily, they won't sell anything that's unsafe in here, although some of those energy drinks are a little bit...
Yeah.
They got too much horsepower.
Yeah, I don't go for those.
Well, it just... A lot of people's hearts are pretty sensitive to
mm-hmm.
that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, arguably, we have a caveman chassis. And again, if you go back to that 10,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we're designed to be naked, running through the forest, running down our food.
Right.
And that's our design. So we violate that, of course, and I can gain weight now walking through Costco eating the samples.
Sure.
You know, so there's an easy availability of calories and all that stuff. But, yeah, if you want to approximate your design, then, yeah, you should be eating a lot of fruits and vegetables. You're not going to be eating a high-fat diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a caveman was a good hunter and killed a deer every week and ate the brain, which has most of the fat in a deer,
mm-hmm.
The most fat they could have got in their diet was 7% of their calories as fat.
Yeah.
And the average adult American has 40% of their calories
as fat. Oh, my God.
So, I mean, it's just, it's...
Well, look at the fast food diets. I mean, look at what people are eating.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, and a lot of people don't eat that, or maybe they'll eat a healthier alternative, like maybe Subway or something. But yeah, if you want to eat, like I love those In-N-Out hamburgers.
Oh, so do
my
I.
kids were in sports
those
and stopped there sometimes.
They're
but I
fries.
Just go there once a month.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, just go there once a month. I mean, there's and the day I eat it, I don't eat anything else because there's
sure.
enough calories in one of those things for take me the whole day.
Right, exactly.
So when people say, "Oh, this is the problem," no, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's how much you know. Food you're putting in your mouth,
right.
So, and that's hard to get people to change.
Yeah,
but that's probably the best thing anybody can do for themselves to
mm-hmm.
avoid guys like me.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure we're going to fix this whole system.
No.
Well, I think he's right. I think it's gonna collapse under its own weight.
Yeah. I think everybody needs to kind of look out for themselves at this point.
Yeah, I agree. No, you're right. You're
absolutely right. And the folks they care about. So happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah,
we won't see you live for a couple of weeks. And thanks, Dr. Malachi. Mm-hmm.
This was fun.
Thanks for looking out for me.
Yeah, no worries.
Personally, so that's I like that. And it's nice that you guys are all in one building. The dentist, the doctor, you're all right next door to each other.
Yeah, we're trying to shamelessly lure our children back to town. I don't know if it's going to work.
You should. You could add a wing. Nice. Yeah, you could add a wing. I'd like it. So if you're looking for a good doctor in Reading, Dr. Malachi's available.
Said he was taking new patients.
Well, Dr. Malachi, pick your poison, huh? Dentist, doctor, what the heck? Everybody else, thanks a lot. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Bob.
Bob.
Aaron.
Everybody on the chat room, you did a good job this morning.
Bill running the chat room.
And the coffee.
We got to get out of here. KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
What do you say?